average age at which boys in the United States and the UK begin using internet pornography is 11 and a half. Here's another statistic. By the turn of the century, kids under 17 were spending 65% more time on adult porn internet sites than they did on game sites.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. I'm Tracy DeVette Griggs, Director of Communications. In this week, for NC Family President John Rustin, we're going to be discussing an increasingly important topic for parents and educators today: strategies for battling pornography in our homes and classrooms. Our guest today is Dr. Thomas Lacona, a developmental psychologist and professor of education at the State University of New York at Cortland, where he serves as director of the Center for the Fourth and Fifth R's, which stand for Respect and Responsibility. Dr. Lacona has spent his career helping families and schools foster good character in young people through writing and speaking to teachers, parents, religious educators, and other groups concerned about the character development of young people around the world. Parents, please be aware that portions of today's program may not be suitable for younger ears. Dr. Lacona, welcome to Family Policy Matters.
Thanks for inviting me to be here.
First of all, how big of a problem is pornography use among our students? Is it really something we need to worry about in elementary and middle schools?
Well, unfortunately, the sexual revolution normalized pornography, and with the internet, it exploded so that it's virtually everywhere. And the sad reality is that chances are almost 100% that children are going to be exposed to it, either accidentally or deliberately. Experts now estimate that the average age at which boys in the United States and the UK begin using internet pornography is 11 and a half. Here's another statistic. By the turn of the century, kids under 17 were spending 65% more time on adult porn internet sites than they did on game sites, and four of the 10 who had visited a pornographic site were girls. And sometimes a particular story brings this home even more dramatically and compellingly. You know, for example, one six-year-old boy was molested by his foster sister, which began a premature interest in sex. As a preteen, he started with internet pornography. It wasn't until he was 17 that his parents found out that he had been molesting his younger siblings for many years while hiding his pornography addiction. So even at younger ages than the average of 11, kids can get pulled into this terrible problem.
That is terrible. Dr. Lacona, what do we know about how pornography exposure and use affects the psychological and emotional development of children and adolescents, both in the short term and in the long term?
Well, one of the worst effects of it is that it presents a very distorted picture of human sexuality, which in turn distorts the normal sexual development of young people who consume it. In pornography, deviant and abusive sex is the norm. One study, for example, of the most popular pornographic videos found that 9 out of 10 scenes showed a woman being verbally humiliated, hit, beaten, degraded in various ways, humiliated, and always the victim was made to seem not to mind or even to look happy about it, whereas actual interviews of people who have quit the pornography industry say that they are threatened, intimidated, various ways, pressure to engage in these behaviors. But, you know, pornography is abusive sex, so it gives a very distorted relationship. You have on your own website, actually, an interview with Michelle Curtello, the president of the American College of Pediatricians, who cited the very important research review that they released in October 2015 titled The Impact of Pornography on Children. Just a few of the findings that the American College of Pediatricians highlighted. Children exposed to pornography, for example, are more likely to sexually assault their peers. In young people, the consumption of porn is linked to increased rates of depression, anxiety, violent behavior, early sexual activity, and sexual promiscuity, higher rates of teen pregnancy. Teenage sexting has been linked with using pornography. College students who viewed pornographic material for 6 weeks became more interested in extreme forms, considered rape less of a crime, were more accepting of sexual infidelity, and expressed a decreased interest in getting married or having children. And studies of brains and how they're affected by pornography consumption show that there's reduced brain volume, lower functional connectivity, and and neural changes that are actually quite similar to those seen in brains of persons addicted to cocaine, alcohol, or meth. And the, perhaps one of the most interesting recent reviews of the research looked at the global impact of pornography, and there are now global trends very similar across cultures, where the more frequently teens consume this, the more likely they are to be preoccupied with sex, the more likely they are to approve of early sexual activity, the more likely they are to view women as sex objects, and for girls to view themselves as sex objects. Boys tend to worry that they may not be able to perform as the men in the films do. Girls report feeling physically inferior to the women. And the more teens consume pornography, the more likely they are to engage in other problematic behaviors. So all kinds of negative effects documented now by cross-cultural research.
It's very sad to think that young children might have their view of the opposite sex and marriage in general swayed by just some accidental exposures to pornography. So if that's the case, when should parents begin talking about this topic with their children so that they all feel prepared to deal with the unforeseen exposure to pornography?
Well, the earlier the better, but I think many parents feel a dilemma here because there's a natural tendency, at least if you value children's innocence, to want to protect them from the worst things that are out there in the world and to, you know, delay talking about the really awful stuff like pornography. Even if you have the birds and the bees talk, you know, by 7 or 8 or 9, you might hold off on discussing pornography until, say, you know, 12, 13, or early teens. But really, that runs the risk that your children are going to be exposed to it by a peer or accidentally on the internet, and then, you know, you'll be coming in reactively instead of proactively. So I really strongly recommend to parents a book which your website has recommended called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn Proofing Today's Young Kids by Kristen Jensen and Gail Pointer. It's very gentle, very tasteful, very concrete, very helpful book, which I think, frankly, every parent should make use of by as early as age 7.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Dr. Lacana, what is the importance of teaching students to think critically, specifically about media, and what can parents and teachers do to help students with that?
Well, the larger challenge here is to really discuss pornography within a bigger project, whether it's in the character education classroom in school or the family setting, which is, what are the right uses of media? How do we use media in a positive way that helps us build good habits and a positive future? How do we avoid using media in a negative way? And the first thing is to just ask, okay, is this media good for me or bad for me? You know, who's producing it? What are the messages? And then the second question is, what are the effects on me? And what are my current media habits? How do they affect the person I'm becoming, my values, my beliefs, my attitudes, my character, you know, how I spend my time? Is it making me a better person or not? And then to make whatever changes are needed in that context. So really, parents need a broad approach to regulating the media in the family. In a lot of cases, we're not nearly proactive enough. So I encourage parents to sit down and to get across a very big concept: the use of the media in our family is a privilege, not a right. And that privilege has to be exercised with the approval and permission of parents in a way that's consistent with our family values. So for any particular TV show, movie, magazine, music CD, video game, internet site, social media, here's the question: is it consistent with what we value and believe as a family? And then you work out a kind of media compact as a family, an agreement that will regulate how you use the media in the home, and that would certainly include something about pornography, where you explain that you're going to be blocking using internet screens, but that the most important control is your child's conscience, because kids are digitally savvy. They want to get around, you know, things that we put as internet blocks. They can figure out a way to do it. So we say we've done this to just as a precaution and a help, but really the most important regulation is the one of their conscience. So you try to create a partnership, really, parents and children working together to create a certain family culture, which includes a sense of mission of the kind of family you want to be, and that in turn includes how you use media to help with the fulfillment of that mission, not to undermine it.
So what about schools? What can schools do to try to help protect students from pornography exposure?
Well, parents and teachers need to be articulate in giving kids very specific reasons to avoid letting this into their hearts, minds, or souls. And, you know, I've offered parents and teachers a list of seven different kinds of reasons, and you can choose from among them according to your moral beliefs, your religious convictions. So it's not as if everybody has to use all seven of these reasons, but they at least give people a sense of how to articulate the reasons not to become involved in this. And many times adults stumble in this area and find it difficult to find the words to say. So the first reason is that pornography treats people as objects to be used. It doesn't respect them. And every person has human dignity that demands respect. Second is that sexual intimacy is meant to express love between people. Porn separates sex from love. It gives a very false picture of human sexuality. Third is that the mind stores everything. Once you let these images in, it may be very difficult or impossible to get rid of them, even if you want to. A fourth reason is that pornography changes the brain, just like a drug. It can quickly become addictive, take over your life. The fifth is that for boys, it may commonly be accompanied by another bad habit, masturbation, something that's also hard to break, and both the pornography habit and masturbation will reduce your self-control and reduce your self-respect. And if you carry either or both of these habits into marriage, that can cause problems between husbands and wives. And finally, from a faith perspective, you know, how is this related to God's plan for the gift of our sexuality? So those are some very specific reasons that, taken together, help a young person resist the temptation and have a solid basis for making the right decision.
So what do we do? What do parents do? What do teachers do if they discover that their child or their student has been mired in this habit of pornography? What are some steps they can take to get out of that?
Well, we need to listen, first of all, calmly to what's happened, just to try to get the facts of the matter. It may have been accidental exposure. It may have been getting part of a peer group where this is going on daily. Just to find out how it came about. And then to explain lovingly but clearly why pornography is seriously wrong for the reasons I've just described. And then how to avoid it in the future. Working out a specific plan. If somebody shows this to you, what do you say? How do you walk away? So kids, if they have anxiety or disgust or anger or a combination of emotions as a result of their involvement, they now have at least a positive plan for going forward. And let me just mention a couple of other resources that families may find helpful.
We would love that. Thank you.
One is the website pornproofkids.org, pornproofkids.org, and that website is created by the two authors who wrote the book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. There's a website that's very helpful for adults, developed by a Catholic psychiatrist at Harvard University's Medical School called overcomingcravings.com. And the psychiatrist, Dr. Kevin Majors, M-A-J-E-R-E-S, has seven virtue-based modules that adults have been able to use to break free of various addictions, whether pornography, alcohol, drugs, and so on. And Mercator.net is an online magazine. Mercator, M-E-R-C-A-T-O-R.net, is an online magazine that has run a number of articles on pornography, as well as a whole range of social and moral issues that are consistent with the Christian worldview. So those are some other resources that people may find helpful.
We'll check those out. And we just thank you again for all the good work that you do to help parents and teachers raise virtuous children and battle this scourge of pornography among our young people.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.